Hi, and welcome to another 15 Minutes with Mark Waid. I'm Mark Waid, Editor-in-Chief of Boom Studios Comics, and this week we're going to bring you the conclusion of the exciting two-part conversation I had with Marv Wolfman from last week, where Marv, who has been writing comics since the late 1960s and has done animation, has done television, has done video games, has done comics, has done pretty much everything. He and I talked at great length about Superman and about many of his other accomplishments, and he was gracious enough to take time and sit down with us. So let's pick up that conversation from last time, where I think we were talking about the evils of Lex Luthor and how losing all your hair can make you evil, which is not true. It's not true. Let me ask you this. So clear, I mean, you were, as the architect of the Luthor who was mastermind, the Luthor the businessman, yeah. which that was your Vandal Savage take originally.
No, actually, Julie
Schwartz, the editor of Superman.
Julie Schwartz, the editor, asked both Carrie and me years before to recreate both Luthor and Brainiac.
Right.
I presented that as my Luthor idea and the more Giger-esque Brainiac.
And the Brainiac took.
Right.
Yeah.
What happened was, the feeling was that I shouldn't do both of them, and I 100% agreed there. So they went with Carrie's on Superman.
Right.
I loved the idea too much, so I moved him over to Vandal Savage, realized nobody paid attention to that book. So
yes.
When I was asked again later, this time by Dick Giordano,
right,
about what I would do, yeah, as John was coming in on the Superman title and I was still on the other Superman book, right, and I re-presented it, and this time they went with it.
Frankly, I mean, you were ahead of your time with the Vandal Savage take. You were very much on the moment in the mid-'80s with the Luthor take, because that was very much the Wall Street, you know, the movie era of greed is good and corporations really becoming these out-of-control monoliths. And I think you really, that character was spot on in terms of... Maybe that's it. Maybe it was the same take with Vandal Savage, but you were... Not to wax your car, as Steve Wagger would say, but you were ahead of your time, whereas the reason it resonated so beautifully with Luthor at that moment is because you captured the gestalt of the moment.
I think it was just done better also.
Yeah.
I have no idea if it would have taken over at the time if Julie and I had done it. I was happy with Brainiac.
Yeah.
My feeling was, when I was growing up, Luthor was a character who every episode was in prison grays, was in prison,
yeah,
would find something in his teeth that allowed him to escape.
Yeah, exactly.
He'd go to his lair, get inside.
I got a cube of sugar here,
yeah,
I can get out.
He'd,
yeah,
MacGyver his way out.
Yeah, yeah.
He would then find one of his zillion secret laboratories lined with lead.
Right.
There'd be a robot inside it,
yeah,
and he'd attack Superman. Superman would beat him up and throw him back into prison all in 8 pages.
Yeah.
He never even had a chance to change out of the grave. And I always thought that was the stupidest thing on earth, that,
yeah,
he was a popular villain because he was in every issue, not because he was any good. As I got older, my feeling, as I said earlier, was that you don't attack Superman physically.
Right.
You need to attack him in the ways that you can't see, or he can't see. In many ways, it's very strange, because there's a little bit of the Harvey Kurtzman Super Duperman and Captain Marvels, where the only thing that could destroy Captain Marvels is,
yeah,
Captain Marvels.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the realization that you have to outthink. For me, Luthor had to become the genius that they always said he was. Not necessarily a scientist, but the genius.
Yeah.
And he had to approach that. He also had to have a better reason for disliking Superman.
Right.
Blowing out your hair doesn't work. I'm sorry. It worked when I was 8.
It would work. Frankly, it would work with me now. But
yeah.
I'm not happy. I walk around cursing the skies now. But yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, half the people shave their heads,
right,
off,
exactly,
today. So
yeah,
it would be cool.
Right.
You needed a better reason. And yeah, I had this character... Right in my initial thing, he lived on top of the mountain,
yeah,
that looked down on,
right,
Metropolis. Everybody looked up to him.
Yeah.
Even Lois was enamored. He paid a quarter of the salaries in all of Metropolis. He donated to everything.
Yeah.
Everybody looked at him.
Right.
Everybody was clearly enamored with this guy who the whole city loved him. And then Superman flies into town, and everybody's head turns around,
right,
and goes... Oh my God, and Luthor turns around and sees Lois looking at Superman and goes, he dies.
Yeah, yeah. That's
jealousy.
There was a really nice line, the very last line of the first episode of the Lois and Clark show.
Yeah.
Which was not, I don't think the line was taken specifically from your scripts, but the sentiment certainly was, which is you hit all those same notes, and then Superman's last line to Luther in that episode as he flies away is, if you want to find me, just look up.
And that was all in the original prospectus that I wrote for them. And I thought that that gave Luther a much more realistic reason, because people can be jealous, and he's watching his power shift, and he is smart enough to know it's over.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's going to fight tooth and nail to do it.
Yeah.
And to me, that was a little bit more realistic than, as I say, blowing out the hair. I like the idea of Lois being drawn to power, because I always thought Lois needed to be completely rethought.
Yes.
She's a bitch. Sorry.
I never liked Lois growing up. No offense. I really didn't. Yeah.
No. Because all she was after was to prove Superman was Clark Kent.
Yeah.
That's why I brought in Cat Grant.
Yeah, who was great, who loved Clark.
Who saw...
My
God, he's 6'4".
Yeah.
He has the same build as Superman,
looks
good, and is a great reporter. He's one of the top reporters in the city, if not the top.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you like him? Maybe that's a little bit of the geek comic book writer saying that. But I think all of us look at him and go, this is a good guy.
Let me ask you something about Clark. On that note, let me ask you this. So, two-part question.
Yeah.
Does Clark Kent use his superpowers in the course of his investigative work?
Yes and no. I just did a story.
Yeah, my answer would be kind of yes and no, too. But I just
did a story, which is Superman's time. This is the one that will be out next decade, which is next year.
Yeah.
Clark explaining to somebody, he's a kid. He's 19. He's just coming to Metropolis. He's explaining to somebody why he wants to be a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also get into his personal thoughts. He talks about being able to write. He loves writing. He loves the actual act of sitting down there and coming up with concepts and stories and crafting words. Then in the personal part that he's not talking, he's saying, this is the only part of me that none of my powers influence.
Oh, that's great.
I cannot become a better writer because I have X-ray vision. I cannot be a good writer because I have super strength. This is pure me.
Wow.
Centers on that. That's the whole attitude of this four-parter.
That's a great take. He found the one thing that he has to work to be better at.
Yeah. This is the one thing Superman has no influence over.
Yeah.
It's purely him. And this in the four-parter, Superman doesn't appear until the last panel of the last issue.
Cool.
It's all about Clark going from being a boy to a man and the realization that he wants to be a reporter for this because that's truly him. And my feeling was that nobody really gave Clark the credit that this character should have if he's going to become a top reporter.
Right.
He has to want that. He has to like it because it's not going to help him.
No.
And I just thank God that the maturity level of writing in comics now allows you to hit on a realistic type of explanation rather than, I'm going to go where I get the news reports.
Yeah.
No, you want that, become a dispatcher.
Exactly.
You know, police dispatcher.
Can you imagine pitching that story to Julie Schwartz, the one you were talking about?
It just couldn't be done.
Yeah.
And Julie was about the most progressive editor you could have found, but that was limited back then because of the audience.
Right.
That was a subtlety that I think if Julie lasted a few more years after the Alan Moore story, he was somebody who saw that there was going to be a change because that Alan Moore story, the last one, really moved Julie one step further.
Yeah.
And he wanted Alan for that.
Yeah.
So he knew there was something else, and I think he was starting to get to the point where he could have accepted that, but not when we started.
Now, you're right. Two-part question, part two.
Yes.
Because this is something I've had to struggle with the one or two times that I've had to retell this part of the Superman story. Would Superman use his powers to get his job as Clark Kent? Because we've done it a million different ways. We've seen the origin of how Superman starts, how Clark starts at the planet, a bunch of different ways and a bunch of different media.
Yeah.
And I can't wrap my head around it. I don't have a good answer for that. It seems unfair. At the same time, he really wants the job.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What I did in this, because I do address that, actually, is I have him write the story knowing the Superman side of it, but not using his powers to write, to do anything specific.
To do anything specific, to not use his superpowers to find some big scoop that will then get him the job.
And what he actually chooses to do in mine is not interview Superman, though there is a brief, I think there's a quote or something that Superman gives him.
Yeah.
Quotes were around that.
Yeah.
But interview everybody else about what they thought about this guy who's just appeared and came out of nowhere and saved everybody. Again, trying to approach it on the human level. this clock, the clock that I'm writing in this four-parter, right, is somebody who wouldn't use his powers because he wants to be a writer.
Yeah.
That would be too much of anathema to him to say, this is me, and then cheat. He doesn't mind writing about this character because that's news, but right, he took the human angle of right, interviewing everybody else.
That's really good.
And the whole, again, it's all set up, the all four parts are about that. There's a slightly different version of Luther that you've ever seen.
Yeah.
He can grow into the Luther who's there, yeah, but it's slightly different. Yeah. Lois is very different. And I just pray it'll come out. I wrote this 3.5 years ago.
Wow. And it's been sitting in a drawer all this time?
The artist has been slowly working his way through it.
Man, all right. So hopefully next year. So
yeah. He's on the fourth one now.
All right. Yeah, I'm with you. But Lois, by the way, Lois is a really hard character for me to crack when I was writing Superman because yeah, I never liked her growing up. I thought Elliot Magan had a really good take on her. Elliot had written those. You ever read his novels?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I really liked his take on her as somebody who, by the time Superman comes around, she's just bored. And it's not because she's a dilettante or because she's flaky. It's just because she's dated kings and she's dated princes and she's dated sports figures. And that's awesome, but she knows there's something more out there.
Well, what I yeah, the way I handled, again, I'm only talking about this yeah, thing that nobody's seen,
yeah,
and I don't know when they will. I did two things with Lois that I really liked. Superman, or Clark, since there is no Superman, Clark falls in love with her without ever seeing her.
From the news report, from the reading
from her
stuff?
Writing,
yeah, yeah,
from people's comments,
because yeah,
He's overhearing what some people are talking. Yeah. He hears her in a crowd, and he can hear her going against, I mean, I'm sure this line is going to be edited out, yeah, but at one point she says at the end of an issue, just when did Metropolis lose its balls?
Yeah, yeah.
It'll be edited out.
Yeah, but that's a good line, yeah.
Superman's, he's listening from a distance.
Yeah, yeah.
Go at him, lady, go at him.
That's good.
I wanted him to fall in love yeah, with everything she talked about, represented, cared about, all of her likes and dislikes before he ever saw her. Because otherwise, it's the kid from Smallville falling in love with the first beautiful girl
that
he's seen.
Exactly.
So that's, on one side,
right,
he has to fall in love with what she represents
yeah,
before he realizes how beautiful she is. On the other side, we as a reader do not see Lois either.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the bar where all the reporters hang out,
right,
and the male reporters there are just talking about the fact that she's gotten this other story, and it's just because she has great legs and
yeah,
all of this
yeah,
stuff. And one of the female reporters there is saying, she gets in at 5 in the morning, she doesn't leave the typewriter until she's finished the story. She goes out, she harasses anybody she needs to get the information.
Yeah.
She's the last person who leaves at night, yeah, though the paper is, of course, open all the time. And she's back in there in the 5 a.m.
Yeah, yeah,
the next morning. And the guy says, that's a 5 a.m. in the morning. They're not willing to put up with the hours, the hard work.
Right.
I wanted to make her a character who was worthy of being the number one reporter in Metropolis
yeah,
at this point before whatever Clark becomes. And again, you don't see her. You learn all about her from everybody else
yeah,
and how everybody thinks about her because she has just cornered yet another story.
That's really good. That's something that I have done before too, and not to that depth. I mean, the take of Clark is interested in her and falls for her even before he meets her because he's read all the stories. So
yeah,
when he finally meets Lois Lane, it's like, wow, you're that Lois Lane.
Yeah.
And then I did a moment in Birthright where he falls in love with her. The way I'd written it was when he's there the first day and he sees her dressing down the publisher because the publisher's being a jerk
yeah,
to Jimmy Olsen.
Right.
And it was exactly, frankly, honestly, it was lifted verbatim from a screaming match I had with Mark Alessi across gym, where I was doing the same thing, where I was screaming at him about the fact that he was yelling at some intern who didn't get him the right yogurt. And
but we were all trying to yeah, make her a real character.
Yeah.
Because she was an awful person.
She really was. But to her credit, she always had scissors. Always has, if you needed somebody with scissors, she was your go-to girl.
Yeah, she was
yeah.
I mean, the Lois Lane comic was just filled with her being an idiot.
Yeah.
There must have been a hate for women.
Oh, my God.
Which, as a kid, I didn't recognize, but
but now, as an adult, you look back at that stuff, and it's just cringe-inducing, because it's just, again, that's, Editor Mort Weisinger had his problems,
yeah,
and you know, what are the two worst things you can be in Mort Weisinger's story? You can be fat, or you can be bald. Those are the two worst things that can happen to you in Mort Weisinger.
Which was both, which was Mort.
Which is Mort, which, exactly, and that is not lost on me.
Yeah.
And yet, so I guess we think it's the greatest romance of comics history because we were told it was for...
Yeah, it's the exact same thing with Luthor. He was the best villain because he was in every issue.
You're right, yeah.
We were not used to, in the 50s certainly, development, characterization of any of these characters on TV. Women on TV were just housewives, or they were stupid like Lucy. There was no sense that they actually could have opinions that were valid.
Right.
And I think the first time you ever had that was almost with the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yeah.
Because she spoke back and she had ideas.
Yeah.
But we didn't know back then how bad she was.
Right.
It's just, I was never interested in those stories.
No.
I always used to say that every Superman story in Superman would begin with a Superman returns from a mission in space and then get involved with a Lois Lane, you know, trying to figure his identity. And I'd say, excuse me, can we see that mission in space?
I know. Returning from a mission in space. I want to see that story.
Yeah.
I know.
And the few times they did it, they were good.
Yeah.
Most of it was these stupid stories. On the other hand, I was 8, and Superman was my favorite character, so obviously I must have liked them to a point.
Yeah.
But I was really fed up by mid-Lois Lane run, you know, the Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane stories, in a way I never was with Jimmy Olsen, which I just found very funny.
Yeah.
Silly later on, but funny, certainly. With Lois, it was like, oh, why does he even care?
I know,
care?
Why bother? With Jimmy, like, and it was, I think this is Tom Pyre's observation, but it was a great one. What made the Jimmy stories fun was that Jimmy had all of the adventures that Superman would have and all those same sort of encounters and none of the responsibility.
Yeah.
So he could just be fun. All right, on that note, I'm afraid we've eaten up two 15-minute segments, and we can keep doing this, and we'll do it again in the future, but thanks for coming by.
My pleasure.
And
it's fun talking comics. I almost never have a chance.
I know, and that never comes up. So, all right, that's been another 15 minutes with Mark Waid, and we will see you next time. Thanks.